listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I am not Paul Strolley.
And you are not Paul Strolley. You just threw me. I had something all prepared. I was going to say, you were going to say Michael Sterling, and I was going to say not the Michael Sterling of the Southampton Sterlings.
Yes, no. I would be that one.
Yes.
I'll take that.
Well, I am Paul Strolley, and he is Michael Sterling. So let's just get those things straight.
Absolutely. And Paul, before we get into other business, we need to thank our sponsors, and that being our presenting sponsor, Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, please visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
Thank you, Michael. Also, our thanks go out to PerformingArtsLive.com for their ongoing support of our live arts calendar. PerformingArtsLive.com is the most comprehensive such listing service in Southern California, enabling you to search events by date, category, and region.
You are so right. And you know, Paul, in studio with us today are two diverse members of the Los Angeles theater community.
I guess that's the most polite way to put it, don't you think?
I
is
think
diverse
so.
Politically
well,
correct now?
Perverse or
okay,
diverse.
So yeah, diverse, so, yeah. Well, there's two of them, so wouldn't it be biverse?
I guess it would when you look at it that way, yeah, absolutely.
Sorry.
You know, in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with veteran actor Alan Blumenfeld, whose career spans Broadway, regional theater, and distinguished roles in film and television.
Welcome, Alan.
Thank you.
A little applause there. Oh, you're not used to that. And also with us in studio today is an accomplished director who's been on the faculty of Cal State Northridge since 1994. I wasn't born yet. I wasn't.
Really?
Yes, yes. He's also at the helm of the classic comedy farce, A Flea in Her Ear, getting ready to open at the Edgemar Center for the Arts in beautiful downtown Santa Monica, California. Doug Kayback will join us later in the program, but he's here right now. Hello, Doug.
Hi. Welcome, Doug.
So, those are our guests.
Those are our guests.
We have to get new sound bites, Michael.
We do. I think for the fact that we're coming up on a year of doing this show,
of the same sound
bites.
I think
the audience would appreciate it.
I think they would, too. There's some that we don't use enough, though. I'd like to utilize this one a little more. We have to find a place for that.
I'm sure we will in this show today, Paul.
How was your week?
It was, it was kind of a normal week. We had a fantastic appearance with Dennis McNeil, who was our guest last week.
At Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's.
At Vitello's.
Yes.
It's a nightclub that I run here in town at the famous Vitello's restaurant. So it's dedicated to presenting the best of Broadway performers in concert and artists who sang the Great American Songbook. Dennis being one of those great, great singers.
And you said he burned the place down.
Burned the place down.
Yeah.
Really.
Great.
Really tremendous. So that was a nice way to end the week. And, just on to regular business. And how was your week?
My week was fine. I survived I survived the rapture.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm here,
gentlemen.
And I'm okay. And
you
I'm
too. Yeah.
Readjusting to life, you know, thinking that
as
it was all going to end.
Yeah.
You looked like you were going to start to say something.
I was going to start to say something.
Yep.
Because, you know, Paul and I often will drive in the same car over to the studio. We lunch at a particular place. It's not.
It's easier to just come right from the massage parlor here, one vehicle, you know.
Especially
I need to be relaxed before a show.
One of us flat out on the back seat. You know, it's not pretty, but it
police
works.
Police escort.
Exactly. But, well, you know, I noticed that last week, actually, when we did that, there was kind of an odor in your
car. Oh, don't talk to me about my car.
No, I'm serious.
Don't talk to me about my car.
It's a very clean,
I am fastidious. I am persnickety and fastidious, and my car, and Monica will tell you, Monica's my wife, I could run a marathon in a wetsuit, and I would still smell like a hillside of daffodils. I do not perspire. I do not perspire. I'm going to explode when I'm 50, but I do not perspire.
That's the polyurethane that you spray on
yes,
every morning.
Exactly. I'm Italian, so I have that natural sheen anyway. Plus, I'm rather hirsute, so yes.
One of those ones. I had to have it let out.
Did you? Yes. Hug me, and you just shut your eyes, and you think I'm wearing an alpaca sweater. But the
So what
my
is it,
car,
what is this
my car
problem?
Smells like a gym sock when the weather gets warm. And it's like that Seinfeld episode. My car smells like the worst BO, and I've had it cleaned like 6 times, steam cleaned, sandblasted, powder coated, you name it.
Yeah.
And if I shut the windows and it's hot, I go in, it's like a hot closet full of grouper. And I have no idea how that happened. It is so bad. It is so bad. And I don't know what to do about it.
Have you seen, is there a specialist for this type of thing? Like a
I
car
don't,
doctor
I,
that would
I
take care of
I don't know.
Those?
Oh, the little, you know, the Arm & Hammer baking soda.
Yeah.
I put it in, and the box opens up and says, get me out of here.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
that,
out,
bad. It's terrible. It's terrible. And I have no idea what it is. I went in to get it cleaned up, and the guy said, there's like a stain on the back seat. All he can think is that there's a stain on the back seat that shows up when they start to clean it. And he thinks it's like milk from a child's, like a car seat.
Yeah.
Like just the constant smelling of that. But I am telling you, you noticed it. You didn't say anything.
That's right. Because, I thought surely that you'd come to some point where you might...
I did come to some point, and stop calling me Shirley. I don't think that's necessary.
Okay. Well, what about reupholstering the car?
Oh, yes, and yes, I'll just get a cosigner for that, Michael. Well, it's a Camry. It's not worth upholstering.
Well, it's a lovely car, though. Not many people keep them up, except the upholstery.
Anyway, let's talk about more pleasant things than smelly cars.
Yeah. Absolutely. Our first guest today, ladies and gentlemen, appeared both on Broadway and in the First National tour of Neil Simon's Laughter on the 23rd Floor. Armed with impressive credentials in both film and television throughout his 35-year career, he not only sits on the board of directors for one of L.A.'s most prestigious theater-producing companies, Theatricum Botanicum, in Topanga Canyon, California, but he also acts with the company and will be starring in Shakespeare's The Merry Wives of Windsor, opening June 4th. Won't you help us? Please welcome Mr. Alan Blumenfeld.
Do you have to play you have to pay Jerry Bruckheimer every time you play that little...
No, it's the internet.
Jerry has
you don't have to pay for anything on the internet. Did you know that?
Yeah. Jerry pays us.
Whenever I hear veteran actor, I always think it's just another way of saying old. So I think that's very sweet. So thank you for using that.
Oh, my goodness. No. We're so happy to have you. And we know this is a rehearsal day for you as well. And you're running out to rehearsal. Right after
I'll be
this
driving,
show.
Though, because running from here to Topanga
But we appreciate you coming directly from rehearsal, although the little Bo Peep outfit is really
Thank
not
you.
Working
it's
for you.
Well, it's not bad. It's the color that works for me. And the staff keeps all the vagrants away.
Are you talking about our staff?
No.
Whoa!
No.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. Say that again, Michael.
You're talking about our staff?
Okay.
Nice.
I want to have that with me when I walk into parties.
Use them up today, Paul.
So, Donald, we talked about we have a lot of intersecting friends when we were out in the lobby. We were talking about that the gentleman, Greg Grunberg, who you played his father.
Twice
on Heroes.
I played his father on Heroes in 6 episodes, and I played his father on Felicity.
Oh, really?
As well, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And we did a movie together. I don't remember. A few years before that.
Were you related in that?
No.
Okay.
No, I was Joey Slotnick's father, but stayed friends with him. Greg is he's just a doll. A great actor, wonderful guy, sweetheart. Family.
Really, just very nice
Good
guy.
Good musician.
Yeah, we talked about the thing that Jamie Denton is also involved in, the band from TV group, which was actually, I think, Greg's idea initially.
It was. And Gregory House... Hugh Laurie,
Hugh Laurie,
piano and that. And
and Chris Kelly, who is not on television show right now, but a brilliant musician in his own right, and he's on the board along with Jamie of Sea Glass Theater. So it's a great group. Wanted to give band from TV a little plug there.
Oh, but back shout out to Greg Grunberg, who's a sweetheart.
Yeah,
great. In touch.
You said Joey, someone. You were connected.
Joey Slotnick.
Yes, Joey Slotnick. And you know the way you said it. You said Joey, and the last name didn't come up. And you know what I fantasized on? Heatherton. Joey Heatherton.
Yeah. Ray Heatherton, the Merry Mailman. I grew up on Long Island. He had the Popeye cartoon show every afternoon.
I'm talking about the
father.
The female.
And this was his daughter, Joey.
Joey Heatherton's father?
Was Ray Heatherton. Played the Merry Mailman.
First show I ever reviewed
Was Joey Heatherton? Did you give her a good review?
No.
Very pretty woman.
12 years old, watching the Serta Perfect Sleeper commercials. Boy, my, that pillow will never be the same.
Exactly.
I'm telling
you. Exactly. I don't.
Maybe that's wrong with. Maybe that's what's wrong with your car.
I was just going. That was very fast.
Everybody thinking the same thing.
Exactly. Well, and you, also, you mentioned Ron Orbach.
Ron Orbach, yes.
Left on the tour.
Ronnie O, yes.
From back out on tour with Chicago. Yeah, Ron and I met in 1974 at American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Been friends since, and our paths cross back and forth across the country, as they do when you're lucky enough to get some work and go back and forth across the country. And he's a dear friend and a terrifically fun guy.
And you guys did Laughter on Broadway together?
We did. I understudied him and then took over for the role when he left. And then we were gonna, and then we did a reading together of the last two Jews left in Afghanistan. I don't know your story. This is a true story. In Afghanistan, there was one synagogue and two Jews. They wouldn't come into the synagogue together at the same time. They would wait till the other one left, and then when the one left, the other one came in. This is
really
true. They would never. So they never had a minion. They never got. Do you know this story?
Yeah.
And. You know, this is like the joke about the Jew who's stranded on a desert island for 15 years, and they come to rescue him, and he says, come, let me show you what I've been doing. He said, look, I built a city. I built a town. Here's a post office and a grocery store, and here's a temple, and over here's the other temple. He says, why do you have two temples? He says, oh, well, that one I wouldn't go to. But this is a true story. It's the two Jews, the last two Jews in Afghanistan, and one of them just died.
Wow.
Yeah, and they never spoke to each other. They were furious with each other. Ridiculous, right?
Just, I mean, insane. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And Ron and I, so we reunited for that like 2 years ago here in LA for that
movie. No, we had Ron on a couple of times, and we just love him.
I love him.
And contrary to popular belief, Ronnie O is not related to Jackie O.
No.
Not Jackie O.
No.
But he is related to Jerry Orbach.
Yes, that's his cousin. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
We loved Jerry Orbach.
Oh, my God.
And we love Theatricum Botanicum. And really, Alan, you're on the board of directors out there. You're an actor out there. And I know that you've been associated in various ways throughout the years. And know Ellen for 20 years, you said
25,
earlier?
26. 25? We moved here in 82 from San Francisco. And I auditioned when we moved here. I think my first show there was 83.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in with one rehearsal. Replaced. It was Taming of the Shrew, and I had done the Bill Bowles production, and I had done Jim Dunn's Wild West version in San Francisco as well, and that's how I got my equity card. And we had one rehearsal, and I went in and replaced an actor. So I've been working with Ellen for 26 years. It is one of the most gorgeous places to come see theater.
Oh, I know.
A 350-seat outdoor amphitheater, and I've played a lot of roles. She's given me extraordinary opportunities out there. I've played most of Shakespeare's comics, and amazing. And then this year, she asked me if I would be on the board, and I gladly accepted. Because the theater is at a place now where it's expanding. There's a third phase project to raise money to build. Mm-hmm. There's a full array of solar panels above the hill so that the theater has solar energy. There's a gray water system going in. There's plans to build a small indoor space and to sort of, you know, professionalize some of the... The setting is so magical and so remarkable. When Will was alive, and I moved here just before Will, just after Will died.
You're referring to Will Gear.
Yeah, Will Gear, who played Grandpa Walton.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We had a couple of the Walton's girls on a couple of weeks back here.
Yeah.
Couple
amazing.
Of daughters,
yeah. When Will was alive, he was an agronomist. Had a PhD actually in agronomy and forestry, and mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time traveling around the world, and especially South America. There, the garden, which is still there, had every herb, every flower mentioned in Shakespeare, was planted up there at one point.
Oh, great.
Gorgeous.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Amazing. So what are you doing there? Did I hear Falstaff?
Is he here?
Did I hear the mention of
Falstaff? Did I hear that? Yes, I'm saying the role. We did it 11 years ago. I'm playing Falstaff in Merry Wives of Windsor, and I'm playing Cléant in Tartuffe. And we're also doing Richard III, Midsummer Night's Dream, a play called Rose's Cottage, which is a really beautiful play. And in the second space, which is 125-seat, 130-seat S-Mark Taper Forum Foundation space, S-Mark Tapered Foundation space, there's the first year that there's an equity show going in there called My Name is Rachel Corrie, which is a remarkable, has been a controversial play, but it's really the story of an idealistic young woman, passionate, looking for some way to bring peace and understanding into the world. Very naive. She was killed. She kept a diary Alan Rickman, the director.
Rickman, oh, wow.
Turned it into a play. It's a spectacularly beautiful, moving play, and we hope to use that not only to open the second space, but to encourage dialogue, and especially in light of Obama's recent speech and Netanyahu's visit here and Obama's follow-up speech to AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, the position of America has not changed. And this is not a political play. It's not propaganda. It's a story of a young, idealistic, passionate, naive young woman looking to find a way to bring peace into this region. So that play is there also.
But it will hopefully, not political, but will generate good discussion. And,
Yes, it will be. It's already generated some controversy. It's a touchy subject. It's been 5,000 years. You've been a hell of a civilization, but it's with apologies to Mel Brooks. But it's been it's controversial, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And
I was speaking of Alan Rickman. I was lucky enough, when I was in college, went to London in a theater junket, and I got to see Alan Rickman in Les Liaisons Dangereuses, Dangerous Liaisons on stage, and he's just like, burnt. He's phenomenal. He was great.
Amazing. He was classmates. Good friends and lives nearby Juliet Stevenson and Emma Thompson, and just the notion that these people are all, first of all, human rather than just that they know each other and hang out and work together. So I did Falstaff 11 years ago out there, and we're doing it again. And my wife said I should do it every 10 years just to revisit it. And it's really fun to come back to a role like that. It's Merry Wives, so it doesn't have the full moral depth of the Henrys, but it's very funny. It's a hysterical sort of situation comedy type play. Mm.
And Falstaff is technically the longest Shakespearean role, isn't it? If you combine it from the different plays.
Oh.
If you combine it from the different plays, it's the most.
That could be. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I know Hamlet is the most number of lines for one show.
For one show, but I think that it's this unusual trivia question, like what's the longest role in Shakespeare? It's actually not Hamlet. It's Falstaff if you combine the two plays.
Wow! I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But it's a great. It's a
look it up on the internet.
Wasn't it the Queen's favorite character?
Right? Isn't that right? So. I don't know if it's apocryphal, but he dies in Henry Ford Part Two, and she said, I bring back the Fat Knight. And the story goes that he wrote it in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and it shows a little bit. but it's just funny. It's just pure fun. It's dismissed often as being light. It's a bourgeois play. There's no nobility in it. There's very little verse. It's all in prose. It's a middle-class play about shopkeepers, about human relationships, about marriage, about money. It's funny. The theater is a 350-seat outdoor amphitheater. Right. Have you been out there?
Yes, I have.
Absolutely stunning. And
have you, Paul?
I'm embarrassed to say that I haven't, but
Please come.
It's the perfect stop because I drive by it all the time because I ride a motorcycle.
Oh.
And I always go through Topanga Canyon, and I always go up. I use that to get to PCH, and I ride up PCH. Matter of fact, the show that I'm rehearsing now, Flea and Her Ear in Santa Monica, when I take the motorcycle there, that's how I come back because I live in Tarzana. So I see the sign all the time.
Well, we open June. This is the shamelessly self-promoting plug part. But we open Merry Wives on June 4th.
Yes.
And then Midsummer Night's Dream opens June 5th. Tartuffe opens June 11th. And then throughout the season until the beginning of October, for every weekend, there'll be eventually five plays performing up there. So in rep. And so it's a true rep. It's an equity company. It's been a proud union company all these years. And the theater is so much fun to be in.
And let me give more details about it. Do you want a Michael?
No, please.
The Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum is 1419 North Topanga Canyon Boulevard in Topanga, California, 90290. That's midway between Pacific Coast Highway and Ventura Freeway. You can call 310-455-2322. That's 310-455-2322. And that's before May 24th, or 310-455-3723 after May 24th. But I always advise people to go to the website where details are plentiful. This would be theatricum.com, theatricum.com. And there's all sorts of a price structure here, but I'm sure that is given in detail at the website.
We've instituted a flex pass. So you can buy it for one price.
And I saw something about dinner, too. There's a dinner offer.
There are going to be themed dinners. French food served for Tartuffe.
Oh, that's great.
Nice. It's a great place to come and take a date and have some wine beforehand and see a show. It's bucolic and exquisite and sexy and sensual and fun.
And you should also be aware that because it is in the canyon,
yes,
and that's the post show.
Exactly.
The 10 o'clock is different from the 8 o'clock.
Exactly. Can I say that on here?
But the other thing, too, that people should know, because you are outdoors and you are outdoors at night, bring a sweater.
Bring layers and a cushion to sit on.
And something comfortable to sit on, yes.
And a cushion on top of it. Exactly. It is a beautiful space out there. And let me ask you something, though, with regard to Shakespeare. Do you think that anyone, you know, I would say that probably most people, especially in today's day and age, mm-hmm. don't or haven't been exposed to Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So to come to a show that you, like you were describing for us, Merry Wives, any of them, do you think that they're going to get it the first time around?
Absolutely. It's the most accessible Shakespeare you'll ever see. The stage, because of the size and scope, and because of Ellen Geer, who's the artistic director now, her approach is so ferocious and so dynamic. It's very cinematic in its mm-hmm. approach. So remember, he made up a lot of words. One out of every 30 words is obsolete. Mm-hmm. So the point is not to understand every word. Mm-hmm. The point is to understand the story and the scene as it unfolds in front of you. And we've been playing to school kids throughout the whole month of May. And the kids come out and see a slightly abbreviated but full-on Shakespeare production and always come away with total apprehension to the show, even the little ones. We have third and fourth graders as well. But for adults, it's most people don't know Shakespeare. A lot of people are afraid of it because mm-hmm. it's very fancy. But it's not. It's really simple, down and dirty, easy stuff. The poetry is magnificent. The humor is bawdy and dirty and sexy, and that's what makes it fun.
And see, I think that's a good point. The idea of it is more intimidating to people than the actual event.
Exactly.
And especially, like you mentioned earlier, if there is one to be, and I want to call it a primer because it's not, but it's one of the most accessible pieces.
Oh, Merry Wives.
Yeah.
Because it's not in verse. It's in prose.
Right.
And even Richard III, you know, there's soaring poetry in it that's really stunning and beautiful. And Midsummer we're doing as well. Again, a lot of poetry, but it's so physicalized. It's so raw and passionate that it is very understandable and a great introduction to Shakespeare if you've never been.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to see that.
Well, and you
get on the
and,
two-wheeler with Monica and go out there and make a night of it.
Well, at least the upholstery won't be a bother on that drive.
The open air.
The open air. And you told me earlier that she smells like a combination of yarn and toast.
Yeah, my wife is the most beautiful-smelling being on the planet. She says sometimes it's yarn, a lot of the times it's toast, but it's either yarn or toast
that she smells like.
Yeah, yeah.
And but do you know what yarn smells like? Because I don't.
It smells like home, Michael.
Yeah,
that's what yarn smells like. It smells like a sweater. That's
I'm going to have to get
but
her.
But a clean sweater.
A clean sweater. And not a sweater that was left in my funky-ass car.
Exactly.
She's getting a big kiss from me the next time I see her.
Right.
Absolutely. So September 18th is how long Merry Wives is running out there.
Correct.
Right? So people do have some time to see that, as you said.
But come early.
Come early.
And then
the
you
run.
Can come again.
Absolutely.
Come early, come often.
That's what they say in Chicago.
And it opens on June 4th, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you so much for taking time out
what
of your day.
We
know that you have to run to rehearsal.
We're sorry
to lose you. But before you go.
Yes.
See, we kind of initiate all of our guests, don't
yes.
we, Paul?
Yes, yes.
And we have them tell us about one of their most embarrassing, perhaps most awkward moments on stage during a performance. Could be in a film. Could be in TV.
Could be on the theater stage. You know, the other thing that we share in common is Laughter on the 23rd Floor,
yes.
the Neil Simon
yes.
play, which you did with Ron Orbach in Chicago.
In Chicago.
I was on I did the show on Broadway and took over for Ron, and then we did a tour. And when you're touring a show, you know, the set has to be accommodated to the theater. And so sometimes things have to be put in. So we had the entrance was a, there was a lip that was at the bottom of the doorway. So the role I was playing, Ira Stone, enters at the end of the first act. And he throws the door open and says, oh, my God, I have a brain tumor, and rushes in. And everyone else is sitting down. And they're sitting behind or around a table. And I came in one night in Philadelphia. It may have been Pittsburgh. Anyway, I came in one night and said, my God, I have a brain tumor. And I hit the lip and fell right on my face. And so from the point of view of the rest of the actors on stage, there was me and then nothing as I disappeared underneath the table. And then I popped back up, and they're all laughing hysterical, except for J.K. Simmons. God bless him. And what a wonderful career he's having. And two beautiful kids and a wonderful wife. But he was the one staring right at me going, go ahead, I'm right here, baby. Don't worry. Yeah. He was staring right at me, not a laugh, did not break, no smile, twinkle in his
eye. J.K. Simmons from The Closer.
From The Closer,
from Spider-Man.
From Vestachbus. I mean, the guy is everywhere, and it's spectacular. Wonderful guy, great actor. The rest of them, the guy playing Kenny, who's the wonderful John Slattery, great actor, he couldn't even look up. He's on the floor.
That's me, man.
Everyone is Louis Stafford. Like, got his head in the garbage can. Yeah. People are looking everywhere except at me. And I had to just keep talking. And thank God for J.K., who's staring around. It's very funny.
I have to add an addendum to that, because when I was doing laughter in Chicago, there's an actor we had on the show named Scott Lowell, who was Queer as Folk for years. He's a great, great guy. And he didn't know that I was also from back east. And there's these late night TV commercials that we both saw growing up, because we're the same age. And we had a little rhubarb moment, you know, the peas and carrots moment, where you just sort of filled it in. And I just turned to him one night and I said, Puppy City at Ocean Avenue and Avenue U at Brooklyn. Free. And he had to leave the stage because it was like someone just dropped into his brain and grabbed a moment from when he was 12 and spit it back.
Know that?
Yeah, it was hysterical. Hysterical. Same show. So anyway.
It was really fun.
But thank you so much, Alan.
Indeed.
Very, very grateful.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I won't get to see you, but I'm...
And
it's a parting gift for you there.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Alan.
That's lovely. What, a 1955. That's just beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Not at all.
Come out to the theater, and I'll get you some tickets.
Oh, please
Actually,
do.
You should pay for them.
No, we should pay for them. We should pay for them.
Alan Blumenfeld, everybody.
Let's play them off the air,
Absolutely.
Shall we? Thank you so much, Alan. What a nice gentleman.
Very nice
gentleman. Yeah, I would have preferred if he wore pants, but aside from that, it was fine.
Well, you know, some of our guests, you never know.
You never know with Pantsless Monday. Yeah. Shall I kick off the live arts calendar
before
we talk to the lovely and talented Doug Kayback with us? Fernando Richardson's Treacherous Brain is a world premiere written by Monica Tronsandes, forgive me, Monica, if I got that wrong, and directed by Andre Baron. It tells the tale of a man who, after having brain surgery, begins to passionately proclaim his love for a woman who is not the wife he adores. The play asks the question, if our brain allows us to express without filters, would all of your thoughts and desires, what secrets would be revealed, even to you? In a humorous way, it also touches on the longing faced by immigrants, on upper middle class guilt, and on the particular experience of couples from different cultures. Fernando Richardson's Treacherous Brain plays at the Open Fist Theater in Hollywood, Thursdays only, now through June 9th.
Wow, Thursdays only.
Yes.
And Paul, Critcherland Records presents...
You just made that up. Critcherland. You just made that up.
No. It's the actual. It's one of the few record companies that actually produces CDs now, of course, for the music of Broadway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the very few around. So when you're really looking or need to try to access something out of the past, chances are they will
have recorded it.
Yes. The Critcherland Records presents the music of legendary Broadway composer Cy Coleman. Wednesday, June 1st, at the Gardenia Restaurant in Hollywood. Coleman's work on The Great White Way includes Little Me, Sweet Charity, Seesaw, I Love My Wife, City of Angels, The Will Rogers Follies, and, more recently, The Life. He also penned such great American standards as Witchcraft, and one of my personal favorites, Paul, The Best Is Yet to Come. This tuneful evening will be performed by a top-notch cast of Broadway performers, including Juliana Hanson, Kim Huber, James Mulligan, Alette Taylor, Andy Taylor, and gifted 13-year-old Melody Hollis, with musical direction by Richard Berendt. Critcherland at the Gardenia and the music of Cy Coleman is a night you definitely don't want to miss. And for reservations, ladies and gentlemen, please call them at 323-467-7444.
Now, for more information about the events in today's live arts calendar, you can visit either stateoftheartsla.com or performingartslive.com, where you can also peruse what's happening in Southern California every day of the week. Now, our next guest is a director, actor, and playwright who holds an MFA in drama from USC and is a co-founder of Genesis Theater. He acted in The Immigrant, Tally's Folly, and Crossing Delancey, and recently directed The Survivor at the Electric Lodge. And he is also directing the upcoming production A Flea in Her Ear, the classic farce by which all others are judged. Please welcome Mr. Doug Kayback.
Yeah.
How are you, Doug?
Good.
Hey, Doug.
You know, I just, I haven't seen enough of you.
Yeah.
So I feel like I want to spend Monday during the day with you as well.
Thank
and you,
you
have
for
to be
having me.
Pretty sick of me by now,
no,
anyway.
No, no, absolutely not. In fact, after rehearsal yesterday, I'm feeling extremely positive.
Oh, good. Good,
what's
good.
To come.
So for the listeners that we have who are not as familiar with this, is it possible with a play as wacky and convoluted and complicated as A Flea in Her Ear, can we do a 25 words or less synopsis of what this play is about for the listeners? Do you think
25 words or less?
You think you can do it?
Probably not, but you know,
we'll give you 40. Go ahead.
We'll give you 40. Right. It's the internet radio. We got more time.
In a nutshell, I mean, there's a marriage that is on the rocks. Maybe there's some questions, and mostly it has to do with what's not happening in bed, and in an attempt a la the best of I Love Lucy, the wife of this Monsieur Chandal decides to plot a little ploy to lure him to a very hysterical place, a bordello in Paris, 1910, and all sorts of doors are opening and closing, and identities are getting mistaken, and people are not understanding each other for a variety of different reasons. But it is one of the most humorous plays I've ever
read. It really is.
And now, am I understanding this correctly, Doug, that the gentleman sitting across from you and myself, Mr. Paul Sterling, is the star of the show.
I am
Monsieur Chandal.
I am not the star of the show. It is an ensemble piece, so there is 14 characters in it. So
yes.
I am doing what everyone else is doing. I just happen to be. I'm the only thing I'm lucky about is that I have two roles to play.
Oh, a dual role.
Yeah, that's one thing that I'm
mistaken identity.
It's a conceit of the play that is hysterical. We won't reveal anything.
We won't reveal it. But when you think conceit, don't you think me, Michael?
You took the words right out of my mouth.
But I think what you're saying, Paul, is right. I mean, and I've been feeling this lately in particular, just in service of a great playwright and really a master craftsman, Feydeau, as far as being able to put the structure of this together and to understand comedy in such a wonderful, broad way, and yet with a real understanding of the frailties of human nature and the foibles of human nature.
Right, right. No, very much so. And it's just, it's interesting because in reading the script initially, you're just like, it's an epic piece. It's a full evening of theater. But as you read it more and more or work on it, as we have, you know, over the months that we've worked on it, it just gets funnier and funnier, and you truly realize the amount of it's almost mathematical in its precision.
That's right.
This play, it really is. It's just
and that's why it's really not a single actor's piece or a director's piece. It really is a playwright's show that we are doing our best to live up to.
To honor,
Now, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Alan earlier. This is being farce, as it is, which is not the typical type of comedy, right? It's something greater than that. Do you think for the uneducated theater goer seeing something like this for their first time, they're going to get all of this? I mean, is it not?
Absolutely.
It's not
yeah.
Shakespeare. We know that. But so that's a different animal. But you know what I'm saying.
This really is a predecessor to sitcom. I mean, when I referenced Lucille Ball, I was just watching an episode, and it could not have been more closely analogous to this type of theater, this particular style of farce. It's stuffed with lots of, you know, the pratfalls and the comic bits of, you know, running into doors and all of those things, which that kind of clowning appeals to every audience going.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, I know that this man, Paul Sterling, does that very well, so I'm anxious to see it for sure.
Yeah.
It's also dirty. I mean, that's the other thing, too.
Right.
I mean, it's not like, it's not gratuitously so, but it is, it's very, I mean, now it's sort of like, oh, it's like a little, you know, blush. It's nothing in terms of some of the stuff that we see on TV or even on stage now. But you can just bet it was scandalous
back
when it came out.
Sure.
Because, I mean, it's just, you know, let's just say, you know, without going into too much detail, if we needed a corporate or pharmaceutical sponsor, there would be one particular product that would be that one. Really? And let's just say it's a little blue pill. That's all I'm saying.
Oh.
Yes.
Valium?
Yeah.
Something close.
Flip that 180 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I know that. Well, that's very, very, it sounds wonderfully interesting and fun, and it does open on June 2nd.
Yes.
And it runs, it's a limited run. It's just 2 weeks.
It is. It's limited. It's June 2nd to the 12th, but actually the pre-sale on it has been so good and so encouraging that we've actually already added two Saturday matinees that weren't on the original schedule. So it's Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8, and then there's a 2 o'clock on Saturday. And then Sundays are at 2 as well.
Yeah. Those matinees are on the 4th and the 10th, I see, by your schedule here, right?
And Edgemar is I tell you, it's like, for those of us who have done theater in town at some of the little 99-seaters here and there, the great thing about Edgemar is that it's on Main Street in Santa Monica. Mm. So you have your whole evening right there. You go down there, there's more than a dozen restaurants
to
choose from.
A wine bar right next door. It's really it's
you
really
park once and you're all set.
And where do people park? I ask that because so many people get concerned about
the Edgemar. Well, there's street parking, but it's Main Street in Santa Monica, so that's not. But Edgemar has its own parking structure and everything. Yeah. So
that's
and actually, I will come out and detail your car.
So it's a full service.
It's a full service, yeah. But I should mention that I detailed my own car there, and we all know how that turned out.
Well, yeah, I got to keep that in mind.
So.
Oh my gosh.
But we are having a ball. We are having a ball. I wanted to ask you too, Doug, because even though we've been working on this, we haven't touched on this, and I'm curious if this is similar. If you've directed farce in the past, is it a favorite form of yours? Have you done it before? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it?
I mean, for me, French farce, this is a first time directing it, directing Feydeau.
Right.
There's been a diverse number of different styles that I've directed and performed in throughout my career. So I feel at home very much in a Shakespearean comedy or tragedy, Greek tragedy, as well as any modern play as well.
Right.
So,
right.
Doing farce right now, I thought was a great choice, given that the most recent show that I directed was just an amazingly powerful drama about the Warsaw Ghetto.
Oh wow!
And to get away from that
was
a nice opportunity.
This is probably about as far from that as you can get.
Absolutely, and just as meaningful, I find, and as resonant. I mean, the desire to be entertained, the desire to have that connection to an historical period. In this case, Paris, the early 20th century has been really fun to get into and to research. And
we've been so blessed with this production, not only in terms of the cast that has come forth and the incredible amount of work that these people are putting forward, but just the set. I mean, it's not a simple set. It's it's two different locations, but it's three acts, and it's very involved. There are spinning beds. There are just everything you can imagine taking place in the French bordello.
Lots of doors,
Lots of doors slamming, lots of...
As I would suspect in a farce.
Yes, yeah.
And I know that you have the lovely Marie Wilson part of your cast. I'm reading some of the names here. Brian Bertone, Aria Bruss, Paul Braxton, Josh Fishbein, Samara Friedman, Mark Gadbois, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Damon Lyra or Lyra?
Lyra.
Lyra. Yeah. Chris Lora, and this name which fascinates me, Chi-Chi Navarro. Mm.
Chi-Chi
Navarro.
Chi-Chi is our Baptistine. Chi-Chi has
Have them rolling in the aisle.
She has the dream role. Because Chi-Chi gets to... Nice. She does. She gets to...
With a name like that.
I think she spends the whole show in bed, doesn't she? Yeah. No, I think she does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Scott Roberts, Selga Sanders, of course, Paul Strolley, Teresa Tilly, Claire Trevetter, is that correct?
Trevetter. Yeah.
All right. And so that makes up, I'll go with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A big cast, about 14 people.
Yeah,
there, right?
And they all come to rehearsal, and it's like, it's an amazing ensemble. We've had such a good time working on this show.
And it really is. It's going to be even more of an accomplishment because it's not even in the main stage area at the Edgemoor. There's two venues there, and this is actually in the smaller one. So that electricity of being, you know, it's frenetic already.
Right.
And then you add to the fact that it's packed into this, what is it, the 55 seats?
55, yeah.
Yeah, 55 seats. So the stage, I think, is bigger than the seating area.
Ah.
Yes, so it may very well be.
Yeah. Doug, ladies and gentlemen, Doug Kabach is also a professor of theater at the University of California at Northridge.
Cal State.
And how do you balance your time between doing a full-time job like that and then taking time whenever you find that time?
I think this is very much a part of what I do, you know, is thinking of myself in total as a theater artist / educator. The opportunity to have to work with students and theater students at all levels, really, who are excited about plays and interested and curious about not only, you know, what's happening now, but the whole history of theater, and I mean, to be able to talk about you know, theater movements. I'm very involved with a group that does theater of the oppressed out of Augusto Boal from Brazil, created years ago, and you know, this diversity of experience is something that I really relish, and so to be able to take that to the university, to share that in a professional venue, that's a very fulfilling career so far, anyway, for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And have you ventured into musical theater? That other
side sure. In fact, that was the beginning place for me, doing musicals, and I, you know, I sang in some really wonderful groups. I was part of a jazz choir that sang at Montreux Jazz Festival and opened for Ella Fitzgerald. That was quite an opportunity and toured through Europe. So I've had a very varied career in that regard, and being in the Traveling Shakespeare Company up in the Bay Area and Lake Tahoe, and you know, just doing.
You're originally from where?
Well, I've grown up mostly in Southern California. Mm-hmm. Originally from back east, from Baltimore area, Washington.
Now maybe it's me, but I don't want to just bear with me on this one. A farcical musical about the Warsaw Ghetto. What do you think?
Yeah, that would be.
Think we could pull that off?
You know, something close to springtime.
Hey, it was very successful on Broadway. Yeah. I'm always thinking about these projects. Let's put the word out there before we forget the dates and times. A Flea in Her Ear is June 2nd through June 12th. That's Thursdays through Sundays, as we mentioned, with two shows on Saturday. That's at the Second Stage at Edgemoor Center for the Arts, 2437 Main Street in Santa Monica. And the tickets for the show are available at edgemoorcenter.org. That's edgemoorcenter.org, so people can go there.
And is it only available online, Paul, or is there a telephone number?
Yes, pushing people toward the interweb.
Got
as
it.
They say.
Yes.
This highfalutin new thing
this
called
thing.
The www. Yeah. So, but I'm looking forward to it. You should come see it.
I definitely am going to come and see it. I don't think I'll be able to come the first week, but I'll certainly make it to the second week.
Yeah.
Since I know the guy that's directing it,
that's
right. I'll probably just call him for some tickets.
I think we'll be able to get you in. So, Doug, like we did with Alan, do you have any, does anything pop out in your head as far as...
you had asked me about that. Yeah, I was thinking... one of my all-time favorite roles was John Merrick, the Elephant Man, and I got to play that for about 4 months up in the Bay Area under the direction of Michael Liebert, the late director who had started the Berkeley Rep.
Oh wow!
And he had this concept. He wanted, if you know the play, the actor playing John Merrick wears no makeup, has to contort the body. I literally had a shoulder problem for about a year after that until I met the wonderful chiropractor who was my first wife.
How convenient.
Liebert's concept was Leonardo's man, you know, stands there, and as the doctor describes all of John Merrick's deformities, the actor contorts himself. And I had seen the play on Broadway, and
Philip Anglim.
And he wore like a little diaper, but Michael Liebert wanted me to be fully nude, which was tricky thing.
Wait a minute.
I'm afraid to
ask. I'm sorry. Can I just interject something here? Talk about the elephant man. Sorry.
So in order to prepare myself for being totally naked on stage, I was part of a company up north, and we get together for barbecues and softball games during the daytime. We was a rep company, and so I just got into the habit of being naked all summer long. So there are pictures of me playing softball in the nude and at parties, and everybody's dressed, and I'm standing there in the nude.
Are you serious?
Are you serious? And that's sort of how I kind of got myself ready for that experience.
I'm shocked. Bob.
I am too.
I'm sorry. These are now floating around the internet.
I was much younger. No, thank God there was no internet then.
Somebody's got to get a hold of those photos.
So then, in other words, if you were up at the plate, it wouldn't be unusual for someone to say, "Hey, Doug's got two balls,"
or swing that bat. Yeah, there you go. Wow.
Yeah, I thought
that was something you'd never know, ladies and gentlemen. He looks so timid.
He does. Yeah. He does. He looks so, collegiate.
Yes.
Academic.
Yeah, collegiate is a good word
for it.
And,
John Merrick is a very sensitive fellow. anyway.
My friend Kevin did Curse of the Starving Class, mm-hmm. and he had to come on stage naked because he takes a pig, not a pig, a sheep, and he carries it as a live sheep on stage for this play. Sam Shepard was beaten by a prop master as a child because he made every Sam Shepard play. It's like, okay, you need 50 live ducks.
Right.
You need a bed that becomes a canned ham. It's just like incredibly complicated things. Yeah. And Kevin came on stage naked, covered in blood after taking this sheep off and slaughtering this sheep mm-hmm. off stage. And he comes mm-hmm. back. And he said it wasn't too bad to come on stage naked because he would walk out there and there were long vams to the theater, coming up. And then so it was real gradual. And the audience had a chance to get used to it. And I said, oh, so that was not too bad, Kevin. And Kevin said, well, until that night that the elderly woman in the front row is looking at her program completely until you're directly in front of her about 5 feet away right. and you get this. Oh my God! Just echoing through the theater. And I said, Kevin, I said, what happens when that happens? He goes, Paul, when that happens, the turtle retreats.
Oh, good Lord.
Just like,
poor fella.
I guess that's what would happen.
Yeah. Have you ever yourself been nude
I've been nude on stage a number of times, but never in a play. No,
oh.
I was always during rehearsals. No, I never have. I never have been
really?
On stage. Well, it's difficult because in my case, it would be difficult because they'd have to change. They'd have to remove, the first couple of rows.
Right.
And it would be difficult really, structurally yeah. for the Michael is if you could hear someone roll
just,
their eyes,
no.
Michael is rolling.
No,
I never have. And I don't think I would be able to do it, in all honesty. I think I'm just a little too high strung for that. I think I'd be a little too nervous. How about you? Did you ever have to be naked on stage?
No.
No?
No, 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 no. But that I ended up almost naked on stage.
Yes, yes.
One of my little worst and most embarrassing moments. But yeah.
Can we retell that or have
oh,
we told
dear.
That already?
No, we've retold that. Yeah, I just basically ended up in a quick change in front of 3,000 people in my dance belt, thinking I was fully clothed below my waist.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And everything else was intact, but when the lights came up, the pants were missing. So the people on the back side of this theater in
right.
the round,
oh great,
yeah, got double their money. Yeah.
So you're saying that you were just acting your pants off?
Yes, in a nice way.
Yes,
in an innocent way. Anyway.
So what is on the dance card? Just at Cal State Northridge, what is? Are you able to say what's coming up there? Do you know what's coming up there that the students are putting together?
Well, I run this program that's now going into its 54th year. In the summertime, it's called the Teenage Drama Workshop.
Oh, that's right. You were talking about that.
And this is this phenomenal program that's had the likes of Bill Irwin and Mayor Winningham, Elizabeth McGovern. When they were in high school and into theater, they came and did this six-week conservatory. And
that's great.
One of the more remarkable experiences I think a high school student can have because they're at a university theater department. We have state-of-the-art facility there, number of stages. We get to bring in theater professionals as directors, as designers, as teachers. They're in a conservatory, work, you know, classes in the morning and rehearsals in the afternoon. They get a full run of shows.
Oh, that's awesome.
Producing The Music Man. There's a stage version now of Disney's Jungle Book. And we'll be producing that as well. And we do a 10-minute play festival, which is really cool because it's its own mini production company in which the students are writing their own scripts. And then the college students that I hire as stage managers and master electricians and teaching assistants, they get a chance to direct, and it all gets designed and put up in a whole production.
How long do they have to write those 10
Only about
plays?
2.5 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that is
Yeah, and they go through about 3 or 4 drafts.
It's similar. In New York, they have something like that, not on the level of an educational institution, but where they have overnight to write a 15-minute play, I think it
right.
is. Cast it, do everything with it overnight.
Right.
They do that here, too. Warren Davis, who we had, who's active with the Blank Theater. He does that every year with a group out here. And actually, also Ian Vogt, who's with Seaglass and his wife Bonnie, they do. It's a Dances with Films thing where it's a 2 minute. It's a 2 minute film.
It's exciting. It's an exciting way to create.
Talk
about working under pressure.
There's no retreat.
Yeah,
you know? It's burning your boats. Is that what they call it? Burning your boats.
I haven't heard
you know
that
term? Before. But the It's I think it's from mythology, but the guy lands on the island, and his army has to fight because he burns the boats. There's no way for them to retreat, so they have to move forward. So
it's
the theatrical equivalent of that.
Theatrical equivalent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, one more time about A Flea in Her Ear.
Yes.
It plays June 2nd through June 12th, Thursdays through Sunday, with two shows Saturday on the second stage at Edgemar Center for the Arts on Main Street in Santa Monica. For tickets, go to edgemarcenter.org, edgemarcenter.org, and we are certain you will love this farce.
Thank you so much for joining us,
Thank
Doug. Delightful to have you on. And Michael, as always, a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank
to
you,
sit across from you.
So and you know we're coming up on our one-year anniversary next week, Paul.
That's right.
One-year anniversary, not personally with one another, but, well, yeah. Well, on
with the radio.
Yeah.
A year on the radio without missing a week. I think
we're holding some sort of record.
I don't know. I got to ask the other folks here at LA Talk Radio if they've done it before, if anyone's made 52 straight weeks without
missing. I thought our producer told us that we were the first.
No, really?
Didn't Ronan say that to you last
I don't know if he did. I'll ask him again.
Yeah, let's ask him again.
Well, we'll find out. We'll let you all know next week. Thank you all for joining us.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, see you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.